I wondered what I could do that would have any hope of making a difference. I was a tiny bit special in my own way. If having a supernaturally thick skull could really be considered special, was there any use that I could put that toward? What would you say their biggest advantage is? Do they even have a weakness? Edward didn't have to ask to know I meant the Volturi. Alec and Jane are their greatest offense, he said emotionlessly, like we were talking of a basketball team. Their defensive players rarely see any real action. Because Jane can burn you where you stand, mentally at least. What does Alec do? Didn't you once say he was even more dangerous than Jane? Yes. In a way, he is the antidote to Jane. She makes you feel the worst pain imaginable. Alec, on the other hand, makes you feel nothing. Absolutely nothing. Sometimes when the Volturi are feeling kind, they have Alec anesthetize someone before he is executed. If he has surrendered or pleased them in some other way. Anesthetic? But how is that more dangerous than Jane? Because he cuts off your senses altogether. No pain, but also no sight or sound or smell. Total sensory deprivation. You are utterly alone in the blackness. You don't even feel it when they burn you. I shivered. Was this the best we could hope for? To not see or feel death when it came? That would make him only equally as dangerous as Jane, Edward went on in the same detached voice, in that they both can incapacitate you, make you into a helpless target. The difference between them is like the difference between Aro and me. Aro hears the mind of only one person at a time. Jane can only hurt the one object of her focus. I can hear everyone at the same time. I felt cold as I saw where he was going. And Alec can incapacitate us all at the same time? I whispered. Yes, he said. If he uses his gift against us, we will all stand blind and deaf until they get around to killing us. Maybe they'll simply burn us without bothering to tear us apart first. Oh, we could try to fight, but we'll be more likely to hurt one another than we would be to hurt one of them. We walked in silence for a few seconds. An idea was shaping itself in my head. Not very promising, but better than nothing. Do you think Alec is a very good fighter? I asked. Aside from what he can do, I mean. If he had to fight without his gift, I wonder if he's ever even tried. Edward glanced at me sharply. What are you thinking? I looked straight ahead. Well, he probably can't do that to me, can he? If what he does is like Aro and Jane and you, maybe, if he's never really had to defend himself, and I learned a few tricks. He's been with the Volturi for centuries. Edward cut me off, his voice abruptly panicked. He was probably seeing the same image in his head that I was. The Cullens standing helpless, senseless pillars on the killing field, all but me. I'd be the only one who could fight. Yes, you're surely immune to his power, but you are still a newborn, Bella. I can't make you that strong a fighter in a few weeks. I'm sure he's had training. Maybe, maybe not. It's the one thing I can do that no one else can, even if I can just distract him for a while. Could I last long enough to give the others a chance? Please, Bella, Edward said through his teeth. Let's not talk about this. Be reasonable. I will try to teach you what I can, but please don't make me think about you sacrificing yourself as a diversion, he choked, and didn't finish. I nodded. I would keep my plans to myself then. First Alec, and then, if I was miraculously lucky enough to win, Jane. If I could only even things out, remove the Volturi's overwhelming offensive advantage, maybe then there was a chance. My mind raced ahead. What if I was able to distract or even take them out? Honestly, why would either Jane or Alec ever have needed to learn battle skills? I couldn't imagine petulant little Jane surrendering her advantage, even to learn. If I was able to kill them, what a difference that would make. I have to learn everything, as much as you can possibly cram into my head in the next month, I murmured. He acted as if I hadn't spoken. Who next, then? I might as well have my plans in order so that if I did live past attacking Alec, there would be no hesitation in my strike. I tried to think of another situation where my thick skull would give me an advantage. I didn't know enough about what the others did. Obviously, fighters like the huge Felix were beyond me. I could only try to give Emmett his fair fight there. I didn't know much about the rest of the Volturi Guard, besides Dimitri. My face was perfectly smooth as I considered Dimitri. Without a doubt, he would be a fighter. There was no other way he could have survived so long, always at the spear point of any attack. And he must always lead, because he was their tracker. The best tracker in the world, no doubt. If there had been one better, the Volturi would have traded up. Aro didn't surround himself with second best. If Dimitri didn't exist, then we could run. Whoever was left of us in any case. My daughter, warm in my arms. Someone could run with her. Jacob or Rosalie. Whoever was left. And if Dimitri didn't exist, then Alice and Jasper could be safe forever. Is that what Alice had seen? That part of our family could continue? The two of them at the very least. Could I begrudge her that? Dimitri, I said.
Dimitri is mine, Edward said in a hard, tight voice.
I looked at him quickly and saw that his expression had turned violent. Why? I whispered. He didn't answer at first. We were to the river when he finally murmured,
For Alice.
It's the only thanks I can give her now for the last 50 years. So his thoughts were in line with mine. I heard Jacob's heavy paws thudding against the frozen ground. In seconds, he was pacing beside me, his dark eyes focused on Renesmee. I nodded to him once, then returned to my questions. There was so little time. Edward, why do you think Alice told us to ask Eleazar about the Volturi? Has he been in Italy recently or something? What could he know?
Eleazar knows everything when it comes to the Volturi.
I forgot you didn't know. He used to be one of them. I hissed involuntarily. Jacob growled beside me. What? I demanded, in my head picturing the beautiful dark-haired man at our wedding wrapped in a long, ashy cloak. Edward's face was softer now. He smiled a little. Eleazar is a very gentle person. He wasn't entirely happy with the Volturi, but he respected the law and its need to be upheld. He felt he was working toward the greater good. He doesn't regret his time with them. But when he found Carmen, he found his place in this world. They are very similar people, both very compassionate for vampires. He smiled again. They met Tanya and her sisters, and they never looked back. They are well suited to this lifestyle. If they'd never found Tanya, I imagine they would have eventually discovered a way to live without human blood on their own. The pictures in my head were jarring. I couldn't make them match up. A compassionate Volturi soldier? Edward glanced at Jacob and answered a silent question. No, he wasn't one of their warriors, so to speak. He had a gift they found convenient. Jacob must have asked the obvious follow-up question. He has an instinctive feel for the gifts of others. The extra abilities that some vampires have, Edward told him. He could give Aro a general idea of what any given vampire was capable of just by being in proximity with him or her. This was helpful when the Volturi went into battle. He could warn them if someone in the opposing coven had a skill that might give them some trouble. That was rare. It takes quite a skill to even inconvenience the Volturi for a moment. More often, the warning would give Aro the chance to save someone who might be useful to him. Eleazar's gift works even with humans to an extent. He has to really concentrate with humans, though, because the latent ability is so nebulous. Aro would have him test the people who wanted to join, to see if they had any potential. Aro was sorry to see him go. They let him go? I asked. Just like that? His smile was darker now, a little twisted. The Volturi aren't supposed to be the villains, the way they seem to you. They are the foundation of our peace and civilization. Each member of the guard chooses to serve them. It's quite prestigious.
They all are proud to be there, not forced to be there. I scowled at the ground. They're only alleged to be heinous and evil by the criminals, Bella. We're not criminals. Jacob huffed in agreement. They don't know that. Do you really think we can make them stop and listen? Edward hesitated just the tiniest moment and then shrugged. If we find enough friends to stand beside us, maybe. If. I suddenly felt the urgency of what we had before us today. Edward and I both started to move faster, breaking into a run. Jacob caught up quickly. Tanya shouldn't be too much longer, Edward said. We need to be ready. How to be ready, though? We arranged and rearranged, thought and rethought. Renesmee in full view, or hidden at first? Jacob in the room or outside? He'd told his pack to stay close but invisible. Should he do the same? In the end, Renesmee, Jacob, in his human form again, and I waited around the corner from the front door in the dining room, sitting at the big, polished table. Jacob let me hold Renesmee. He wanted space in case he had to phase quickly. Though I was glad to have her in my arms, it made me feel useless. It reminded me that in a fight with mature vampires, I was no more than an easy target. I didn't need my hands free. I tried to remember Tanya, Kate, Carmen, and Eliezer from the wedding. Their faces were murky in my ill-lit memories. I only knew they were beautiful, two blondes and two brunettes. I couldn't remember if there was any kindness in their eyes. Edward leaned motionlessly against the back window wall, staring toward the front door. It didn't look like he was seeing the room in front of him. We listened to the cars zooming past, out on the freeway, none of them slowing. Renesmee nestled into my neck, her hand against my cheek, but no images in my head. She didn't have pictures for her feelings now. What if they don't like me? She whispered, and all our eyes flashed to her face. Of course they'll, Jacob started to say, but I silenced him with a look. They don't understand you, Renesmee, because they've never met anyone like you, I told her, not wanting to lie to her with promises that might not come true. Getting them to understand is the problem. She sighed, and in my head flashed pictures of all of us in one quick burst. Vampire, human, werewolf. She fit nowhere. You're special. That's not a bad thing. She shook her head in disagreement. She thought of our strained faces and said, This is my fault. No, Jacob, Edward, and I all said at exactly the same time. But before we could argue further, we heard the sound we'd been waiting for. The slowing of an engine on the freeway. The tires moving from pavement to soft dirt. Edward darted around the corner to stand waiting by the door. Renesmee hid in my hair. Jacob and I stared at each other across the table, desperation on our faces. The car moved quickly through the woods, faster than Charlie or Sue drove. We heard it pull into the meadow and stop by the front porch. Four doors opened and closed. They didn't speak as they approached the door. Edward opened it before they could knock. Edward! A female voice enthused. Hello, Tanya, Kate, Eliezer, Carmen. Three murmured hellos. Carlisle said he needed to talk to us right away, the first voice said, Tanya. I could hear that they all were still outside. I imagined Edward in the doorway blocking their entrance. What's the problem? Trouble with the werewolves? Jacob rolled his eyes. No, Edward said. Our truce with the werewolves is stronger than ever. A woman chuckled. Aren't you going to invite us in? Tanya asked. And then she continued without waiting for an answer. Where's Carlisle? Carlisle had to leave. There was a short silence. What's going on, Edward? Tanya demanded. If you could give me the benefit of the doubt for just a few minutes, he answered. I have something difficult to explain, and I'll need you to be open-minded until you understand. Is Carlisle all right? A male voice asked anxiously. Eliezer. None of us is all right, Eliezer, Edward said. And then he patted something, maybe Eliezer's shoulder. but physically, Carlyle is fine.
Physically?
Tanya asked sharply. What do you mean? I mean that my entire family is in very grave danger. But before I explain, I ask for your promise. Listen to everything I say before you react. I am begging you to hear me out. A longer silence greeted his request. Through the strained hush, Jacob and I stared wordlessly at each other. His russet lips paled.
We're listening, Tanya finally said. We will hear it all before we judge.
Thank you, Tanya, Edward said fervently. We wouldn't involve you in this if we had any other choice. Edward moved. We heard four sets of footsteps walk through the doorway. Someone sniffed.
I knew those werewolves were involved, Tanya muttered.
Yes, and they're on our side again. The reminder silenced Tanya.
Where's your Bella?
One of the other female voices asked.
How is she?
She'll join us shortly. She's well, thank you. She's taken to immortality with amazing finesse. Tell us about the danger, Edward, Tanya said quietly. We'll listen, and we'll be on your side, where we belong. Edward took a deep breath. I'd like you to witness for yourselves first. Listen, in the other room, what do you hear? It was quiet, and then there was movement.
Just listen first, please, Edward said.
A werewolf, I assume.
I can hear his heart, Tanya said.
What else? Edward asked.
There was a pause.
What is that thrumming?
Kate or Carmen asked.
Is that some kind of a bird?
No, but remember what you're hearing. Now what do you smell, besides the werewolf?
Is there a human here? Eliezer whispered.
No, Tanya disagreed. It's not human, but closer to human than the rest of the scents here.
What is that, Edward?
I don't think I've ever smelled that fragrance before.
You most certainly have not, Tanya.
Please, please remember that this is something entirely new to you. Throw away your preconceived notions.
I promised you I would listen, Edward.
All right, then.
Bella, bring out Renesmee, please.
My legs felt strangely numb, but I knew that feeling was all in my head. I forced myself not to hold back, not to move sluggishly, as I got to my feet and walked the few short feet to the corner. The heat from Jacob's body flamed close behind me as he shadowed my steps. I took one step into the bigger room and then froze, unable to force myself farther forward. Renesmee took a deep breath and then peeped out from under my hair, her little shoulders tight, expecting a rebuff. I thought I'd prepared myself for their reaction, for accusations, for shouting, for the motionlessness of deep stress. Tanya skittered back four steps, her strawberry curls quivering, like a human confronted by a venomous snake. Kate jumped back all the way to the front door and braced herself against the wall there. A shocked hiss came from between her clenched teeth. Eliezer threw himself in front of Carmen in a protective crouch.
Oh, please, I heard Jacob complain under his breath.
Edward put his arm around Renesmee and me.
You promised to listen, he reminded them.
Some things cannot be heard, Tanya exclaimed. How could you, Edward? Do you not know what this means?
We have to get out of here,
Kate said anxiously, her hand on the doorknob.
Edward,
Eliezer seemed beyond words.
Wait, Edward said, his voice harder now. Remember what you hear, what you smell. Renesmee is not what you think she is.
There are no exceptions to this rule, Edward,
Tanya snapped back.
Tanya,
Edward said sharply.
You can hear her heartbeat. Stop and think about what that means.
Her heartbeat?
Carmen whispered, peering around Eliezer's shoulder.
She's not a full vampire child, Edward answered, directing his attention toward Carmen's less hostile expression. She's half human.
The four vampires stared at him like he was speaking a language none of them knew.
Hear me.
Edward's voice shifted into a smooth velvet tone of persuasion.
Renesmee is one of a kind. I am her father,
not her creator, her biological father. Tanya's head was shaking, just a tiny movement. She didn't seem aware of it.
Edward, you can't expect us to,
Eliezer started to say.
Tell me another explanation that fits, Eliezer.
You can feel the warmth of her body in the air.
Blood runs in her veins, Eliezer. You can smell it.
How? Kate breathed. Bella is her biological mother, Edward told her. She conceived, carried, and gave birth to Renesmee while she was still human. It nearly killed her. I was hard-pressed to get enough venom into her heart to save her.
I've never heard of such a thing, Eliezer said.
His shoulders were still stiff, his expression cold.
Physical relationships between vampires and humans are not common, Edward answered, a bit of dark humor in his tone now. Human survivors of such trysts are even less common. Wouldn't you agree, cousins?
Both Kate and Tanya scowled at him.
Come now, Eliezer. Surely you can see the resemblance.
It was Carmen who responded to Edward's words. She stepped around Eliezer, ignoring his half-articulated warning, and walked carefully to stand right in front of me. She leaned down slightly, looking carefully into Renesmee's face.
You seem to have your mother's eyes, she said in a low, calm voice. But your father's face.
And then, as if she could not help herself, she smiled at Renesmee. Renesmee's answering smile was dazzling. She touched my face without looking away from Carmen. She imagined touching Carmen's face, wondering if that was okay.
Do you mind if Renesmee tells you about it herself? I asked Carmen.
I was still too stressed to speak above a whisper.
She has a gift for explaining things.
Carmen was still smiling at Renesmee.
Do you speak, little one?
Yes, Renesmee answered in her trilling high soprano.
All of Tanya's family flinched at the sound of her voice, except for Carmen.
But I can show you more than I can tell you.
She placed her little dimpled hand on Carmen's cheek. Carmen stiffened like an electric shock had run through her. Eliezer was at her side in an instant, his hands on her shoulders as if to yank her away.
Wait,
Carmen said breathlessly, her unblinking eyes locked on Renesmee's. Renesmee showed Carmen her explanation for a long time. Edward's face was intent as he watched with Carmen, and I wished so much that I could hear what he heard too. Jacob shifted his weight impatiently behind me, and I knew he was wishing the same.
What's Nessie showing her?
He grumbled under his breath.
Everything, Edward murmured.
Another minute passed, and Renesmee dropped her hand from Carmen's face. She smiled winningly at the stunned vampire.
She really is your daughter, isn't she?
Carmen breathed, switching her wide topaz eyes to Edward's face.
Such a vivid gift.
It could only have come from a very gifted father.
Do you believe what she showed you?
Edward asked, his expression intense.
Without a doubt,
Carmen said simply. Eliezer's face was rigid with distress.
Carmen!
Carmen took his hands into her own and squeezed them.
Impossible as it seems, Edward has told you nothing but truth. Let the child show you.
Carmen nudged Eliezer closer to me and then nodded at Renesmee.
Show him me, querida.
Renesmee grinned, clearly delighted with Carmen's acceptance, and touched Eliezer lightly on the forehead.
Ay, caray,
he spit, and jerked away from her.
What did she do to you?
Tanya demanded, coming closer warily. Kate crept forward too.
She's just trying to show you her side of the story,
Carmen told him in a soothing voice. Renesmee frowned impatiently.
Watch, please, she commanded Eliezer.
She stretched her hand out to him, and then left a few inches between her fingers and his face, waiting. Eliezer eyed her suspiciously, and then glanced at Carmen for help. She nodded encouragingly. Eliezer took a deep breath, and then leaned closer until his forehead touched her hand again. He shuddered when it began, but held still this time. His eyes closed in concentration.
Ah, he sighed,
when his eyes reopened a few minutes later.
I see.
Renesmee smiled at him. He hesitated, then smiled a slightly unwilling smile in response.
Eliezer? Tanya asked. It's all true, Tanya. This is no immortal child. She's half human. Come, see for yourself.
In silence, Tanya took her turn standing warily before me, and then Kate, both showing shock as that first image hit them with Renesmee's touch. But then, just like Carmen and Eliezer, they seemed completely won over as soon as it was done. I shot a glance at Edward's smooth face, wondering if it could really be so easy. His golden eyes were clear, unshadowed. There was no deception in this then.
Thank you for listening, he said quietly. But there is the grave danger you warned us of, Tanya said. Not directly from this child, I see. But surely from the Volturi, then. How did they find out about her? When are they coming?
I was not surprised at her quick understanding. After all, what could possibly be a threat to a family as strong as mine? Only the Volturi.
When Bella saw Irina that day in the mountains, Edward explained, she had Renesmee with her.
Kate hissed, her eyes narrowing to slits.
Irina did this? To you? To Carlisle? Irina?
No, Tanya whispered. Someone else.
Alice saw her go to them, Edward said. I wondered if the others noticed the way he winced just slightly when he spoke Alice's name.
How could she do this thing? Eliezer asked of no one.
Imagine if you had seen Renesmee only from a distance. If you had not waited for our explanation. Tanya's eyes tightened.
No matter what she thought, you are our family.
There's nothing we can do about Irina's choice now. It's too late. Alice gave us a month. Both Tanya's and Eliezer's heads cocked to one side. Kate's brow furrowed.
So long? Eliezer asked. They are all coming. That must take some preparation.
Eliezer gasped.
The entire guard?
Not just the guard, Edward said, his jaw straining tight.
Aro, Caius, Marcus, even the wives.
Shock glazed over all their eyes.
Impossible, Eliezer said blankly.
I would have said the same 2 days ago, Edward said. Eliezer scowled, and when he spoke it was nearly a growl.
But that doesn't make any sense. Why would they put themselves and the wives in danger?
It doesn't make sense from that angle. Alice said there was more to this than just punishment for what they think we've done. She thought you could help us.
More than punishment? But what else is there?
Eliezer started pacing, stalking toward the door and back again, as if he were alone here. His eyebrows furrowed as he stared at the floor.
Where are the others, Edward? Carlisle and Alice and the rest? Tanya asked.
Edward's hesitation was almost unnoticeable. He answered only part of her question. Looking for friends who might help us. Tanya leaned toward him, holding her hands out in front of her.
Edward, no matter how many friends you gather, we can't help you win.
We can only die with you. You must know that.
Of course, perhaps the four of us deserve that after what Irina has done now. After how we failed you in the past. For her sake, that time as well.
Edward shook his head quickly. We're not asking you to fight and die with us, Tanya. You know Carlisle would never ask for that.
Then what, Edward?
We're just looking for witnesses. If we can make them pause, just for a moment. If they would let us explain. He touched Renesmee's cheek. She grabbed his hand and held it pressed against her skin. It's difficult to doubt our story when you see it for yourself. Tanya nodded slowly.
Do you think her past will matter to them so much?
Only as it foreshadows her future. The point of the restriction was to protect us from exposure. From the excesses of children who could not be tamed.
I'm not dangerous at all, Renesmee interjected.
I listened to her high, clear voice with new ears, imagining how she sounded to the others.
I never hurt Grandpa or Sue or Billy. I love humans, and wolf people like my Jacob. She dropped Edward's hand to reach back and pat Jacob's arm. Tanya and Kate exchanged a quick glance. If Irina had not come so soon, Edward mused, we could have avoided all of this. Renesmee grows at an unprecedented rate. By the time the month is past, she'll have gained another half year of development.
Well, that is something we can certainly witness, Carmen said in a decided tone.
We'll be able to promise that we've seen her mature ourselves. How could the Volturi ignore such evidence?
Eliezer mumbled.
How indeed? But he did not look up, and he continued pacing as if he were paying no attention at all.
Yes, we can witness for you, Tanya said. Certainly that much. We will consider what more we might do.
Tanya, Edward protested, hearing more in her thoughts than there was in her words. We don't expect you to fight with us.
If the Volturi won't pause to listen to our witness, we cannot simply stand by, Tanya insisted. Of course, I should only speak for myself.
Kate snorted.
Do you really doubt me so much, sister?
Tanya smiled widely at her.
It is a suicide mission, after all.
Kate flashed a grin back and then shrugged nonchalantly.
I'm in.
I too will do what I can to protect the child, Carmen agreed. Then, as if she couldn't resist, she held her arms out toward Renesmee. May I hold you, bebe linda?
Renesmee reached eagerly toward Carmen, delighted with her new friend.
Carmen hugged her close, murmuring to her in Spanish. It was like it had been with Charlie, and before that with all the Cullens. Renesmee was irresistible. What was it about her that drew everyone to her, that made them willing even to pledge their lives in her defense? For a moment, I thought that maybe what we were attempting might be possible. Maybe Renesmee could do the impossible and win over our enemies as she had our friends. And then I remembered that Alice had left us, and my hope vanished as quickly as it had appeared.
Chapter 31. Talented.
What is the werewolf's part in this? Tanya asked then, eyeing Jacob.
Jacob spoke before Edward could answer.
If the Volturi won't stop to listen about Nessie, I mean Renesmee, he corrected himself, remembering that Tanya would not understand his stupid nickname. We will stop them.
Very brave, child, but that would be impossible for more experienced fighters than you are.
You don't know what we can do.
Tanya shrugged.
It is your own life, certainly, to spend as you choose.
Jacob's eyes flickered to Renesmee, still in Carmen's arms, with Kate hovering over them, and it was easy to read the longing in them.
She is special, that little one, Tanya mused. Hard to resist.
A very talented family, Eliezer murmured as he paced.
His tempo was increasing. He flashed from the door to Carmen and back again every second.
A mind reader for a father, a shield for a mother.
And then, whatever magic this extraordinary child has bewitched us with.
I wonder if there is a name for what she does, or if it is the norm for a vampire hybrid, as if such a thing could ever be considered normal.
A vampire hybrid indeed.
Excuse me?
Edward said in a stunned voice. He reached out and caught Eliezer's shoulder as he was about to turn again for the door.
What did you just call my wife?
Eliezer looked at Edward curiously, his manic pacing forgotten for the moment.
A shield, I think.
She's blocking me now, so I can't be sure. I stared at Eliezer, my brows furrowing in confusion.
Shield? What did he mean about my blocking him? I was standing right here beside him, not defensive in any way.
A shield? Edward repeated, bewildered.
Come now, Edward. If I can't get a read on her, I doubt you can either.
Can you hear her thoughts right now?
Eliezer asked.
No, Edward murmured. But I've never been able to do that, even when she was human.
Never?
Eliezer blinked.
Interesting.
That would indicate a rather powerful latent talent, if it was manifesting so clearly even before the transformation. I can't feel a way through her shield to get a sense of it at all.
Yet she must be raw still. She's only a few months old. The look he gave Edward now was almost exasperated. And apparently completely unaware of what she's doing. Totally unconscious. Ironic. Aro sent me all over the world searching for such anomalies. And you simply stumble across it by accident and don't even realize what you have. Eliezer shook his head in disbelief. I frowned. What are you talking about? How can I be a shield? What does that even mean? All I could picture in my head was a ridiculous medieval suit of armor. Eliezer leaned his head to one side as he examined me. I suppose we were overly formal about it in the guard. In truth, categorizing talents is a subjective, haphazard business. Every talent is unique. Never exactly the same thing twice. But you, Bella, are fairly easy to classify. Talents that are purely defensive, that protect some aspect of the bearer, are always called shields. Have you ever tested your abilities? Blocked anyone besides me and your mate? It took me a few seconds, despite how quickly my new brain worked, to organize my answer. It only works with certain things, I told him. My head is sort of private, but it doesn't stop Jasper from being able to mess with my mood or Alice from seeing my future. Purely a mental defense, Eliezer nodded to himself. Limited but strong. Aro couldn't hear her, Edward interjected, though she was human when they met. Eliezer's eyes widened. Jane tried to hurt me, but she couldn't, I said. Edward thinks Dimitri can't find me and that Alec can't bother me either. Is that good? Eliezer, still gaping, nodded. Quite. A shield, Edward said, deep satisfaction saturating his tone. I never thought of it that way. The only one I've ever met before was Renata, and what she did was so different. Eliezer had recovered slightly. Yes. No talent ever manifests in precisely the same way, because no one ever thinks in exactly the same way. Who's Renata? What does she do? I asked. Renesmee was interested too, leaning away from Carmen so that she could see around Kate. Renata is Aro's personal bodyguard, Eliezer told me. A very practical kind of shield, and a very strong one. I vaguely remembered a small crowd of vampires hovering close to Aro in his macabre tower. Some male, some female. I couldn't remember the women's faces in the uncomfortable, terrifying memory. One must have been Renata. I wonder, Eliezer mused. You see, Renata is a powerful shield against a physical attack. If someone approaches her, or Aro, as she is always close beside him in a hostile situation, they find themselves diverted. There's a force around her that repels, though it's almost unnoticeable. You simply find yourself going a different direction than you planned, with a confused memory as to why you wanted to go that other way in the first place. She can project her shield several meters out from herself. She also protects Caius and Marcus, too, when they have a need. But Aro is her priority. What she does isn't actually physical, though. Like the vast majority of our gifts, it takes place inside the mind. If she tried to keep you back, I wonder who would win. He shook his head. I've never heard of Aro's or Jane's gifts being thwarted. Mama, you're special, Renesmee told me without any surprise, like she was commenting on the color of my clothes. I felt disoriented. Didn't I already know my gift? I had my super self-control that had allowed me to skip right over the horrifying newborn year. Vampires only had one extra ability at most, right? Or had Edward been correct in the beginning? Before Carlyle had suggested that my self-control could be something beyond the natural, Edward had thought my restraint was just a product of good preparation, focus, and attitude, he declared. Which one had been right? Was there more I could do? A name and a category for what I was? Can you project? Kate asked interestedly. Project? I asked. Push it out from yourself, Kate explained. Shield someone besides yourself. I don't know. I've never tried. I didn't know I should do that.
Oh, you might not be able to, Kate said quickly. Heaven knows I've been working on it for centuries, and the best I can do is run a current over my skin. I stared at her, mystified. Kate's got an offensive skill, Edward said. Sort of like Jane. I flinched away from Kate automatically, and she laughed.
I'm not sadistic about it, she assured me. It's just something that comes in handy during a fight.
Kate's words were sinking in, beginning to make connections in my mind.
Shield someone besides yourself, she'd said,
as if there were some way for me to include another person in my strange, quirky, silent head. I remembered Edward cringing on the ancient stones of the Volturi castle turret. Though this was a human memory, it was sharper, more painful than most of the others, like it had been branded into the tissues of my brain. What if I could stop that from happening ever again? What if I could protect him, protect Renesmee? What if there was even the faintest glimmer of a possibility that I could shield them too?
You have to teach me what to do, I insisted, unthinkingly grabbing Kate's arm. You have to show me how.
Kate winced at my grip.
Maybe, if you stop trying to crush my radius.
Oops. Sorry.
You're shielding all right, Kate said. That move should have about shocked your arm off. You didn't feel anything just now?
That wasn't really necessary, Kate. She didn't mean any harm, Edward muttered under his breath. Neither of us paid attention to him.
No, I didn't feel anything. Were you doing your electric current thing?
I was.
I've never met anyone who couldn't feel it, immortal or otherwise. You said you project it on your skin?
Kate nodded.
It used to be just in my palms, kind of like Aro.
Or Renesmee, Edward interjected.
But after a lot of practice, I can radiate the current all over my body. It's a good defense. Anyone who tries to touch me drops like a human that's been tasered. It only downs them for a second, but that's long enough.
I was only half listening to Kate, my thoughts racing around the idea that I might be able to protect my little family if I could just learn fast enough. I wished fervently that I might be good at this projecting thing too, like I was somehow mysteriously good at all the other aspects of being a vampire. My human life had not prepared me for things that came naturally, and I couldn't make myself trust this aptitude to last. It felt like I had never wanted anything so badly before this, to be able to protect what I loved. Because I was so preoccupied, I didn't notice the silent exchange going on between Edward and Eliezer until it became a spoken conversation.
Can you think of even one exception, though? Edward asked.
I looked over to make sense of his comment and realized that everyone else was already staring at the two men. They were leaning toward each other intently, Edward's expression tight with suspicion, Eliezer's unhappy and reluctant.
I don't want to think of them that way, Eliezer said through his teeth.
I was surprised at the sudden change in the atmosphere.
If you're right, Eliezer began again. Edward cut him off. The thought was yours, not mine. If I'm right, I can't even grasp what that would mean. It would change everything about the world we've created. It would change the meaning of my life, what I have been a part of.
Your intentions were always the best, Eliezer.
Would that even matter? What have I done? How many lives?
Tanya put her hand on Eliezer's shoulder in a comforting gesture.
What did we miss, my friend? I want to know so that I can argue with these thoughts. You've never done anything worth castigating yourself this way.
Oh, haven't I? Eliezer muttered. Then he shrugged out from under her hand and began his pacing again, faster even than before. Tanya watched him for half a second and then focused on Edward.
Explain.
Edward nodded, his tense eyes following Eliezer as he spoke. He was trying to understand why so many of the Volturi would come to punish us. It's not the way they do things. Certainly we are the biggest mature coven they've dealt with. But in the past, other covens have joined to protect themselves, and they never presented much of a challenge despite their numbers. We are more closely bonded, and that's a factor, but not a huge one. He was remembering other times that covens have been punished for one thing or the other, and a pattern occurred to him. It was a pattern that the rest of the guard would never have noticed. Since Eliezer was the one passing the pertinent intelligence privately to Aro, a pattern that only repeated every other century or so. What was this pattern? Carmen asked, watching Eliezer as Edward was. Aro does not often personally attend a punishing expedition, Edward said. But in the past, when Aro wanted something in particular, it was never long before evidence turned up proving that this coven or that coven had committed some unpardonable crime. The ancients would decide to go along to watch the guard administer justice. And then, once the coven was all but destroyed, Aro would grant a pardon to one member whose thoughts he would claim were particularly repentant. Always it would turn out that this vampire had the gift Aro had admired. Always this person was given a place with the guard. The gifted vampire was won over quickly, always so grateful for the honor. There were no exceptions. It must be a heady thing to be chosen, Kate suggested. Ha! Eliezer snarled, still in motion. There is one among the guard, Edward said, explaining Eliezer's angry reaction. Her name is Chelsea. She has influence over the emotional ties between people. She can both loosen and secure these ties. She could make someone feel bonded to the Volturi, to want to belong, to want to please them. Eliezer came to an abrupt halt. We all understood why Chelsea was important. In a fight, if we could separate allegiances between allied covens, we could defeat them that much more easily. If we could distance the innocent members of a coven emotionally from the guilty, justice could be done without unnecessary brutality. The guilty could be punished without interference, and the innocent could be spared. Otherwise, it was impossible to keep the coven from fighting as a whole. So Chelsea would break the ties that bound them together. It seemed a great kindness to me, evidence of Aro's mercy. I did suspect that Chelsea kept our own band more tightly knit, but that, too, was a good thing. It made us more effective. It helped us coexist more easily. This clarified old memories for me. It had not made sense to me before how the guard obeyed their master so gladly, with almost lover-like devotion. How strong is her gift? Tanya asked with an edge to her voice. Her gaze quickly touched on each member of her family. Eliezer shrugged. I was able to leave with Carmen. And then he shook his head. But anything weaker than the bond between partners is in danger. In a normal coven, at least. Those are weaker bonds than those in our family, though. Abstaining from human blood makes us more civilized. Lets us form true bonds of love. I doubt she could turn our allegiances, Tanya. Tanya nodded, seeming reassured, while Eliezer continued with his analysis. I could only think that the reason Aro had decided to come himself, to bring so many with him, is because his goal is not punishment, but acquisition, Eliezer said. He needs to be there to control the situation, but he needs the entire guard for protection from such a large, gifted coven. On the other hand, that leaves the other ancients unprotected in Volterra. Too risky. Someone might try to take advantage. So they all come together. How else could he be sure to preserve the gifts that he wants? He must want them very badly, Eliezer mused. Edward's voice was low as a breath. From what I saw of his thoughts last spring, Aro's never wanted anything more than he wants Alice. I felt my mouth fall open. Remembering the nightmarish pictures I had imagined long ago, Edward and Alice in black cloaks, with blood-red eyes. Their faces cold and remote as they stood close as shadows, Aro's hands on theirs. Had Alice seen this more recently? Had she seen Chelsea trying to strip away her love for us? To bind her to Aro and Caius and Marcus? Is that why Alice left? I asked, my voice breaking on her name. Edward put his hand against my cheek. I think it must be. To keep Aro from gaining the thing he wants most of all.
to keep her power out of his hands. I heard Tanya and Kate murmuring in disturbed voices and remembered that they hadn't known about Alice.
He wants you too, I whispered.
Edward shrugged, his face suddenly a little too composed. Not nearly as much. I can't really give him anything more than he already has. And of course that's dependent on his finding a way to force me to do his will. He knows me, and he knows how unlikely that is. He raised one eyebrow sardonically. Eliezer frowned at Edward's nonchalance.
He also knows your weaknesses,
Eliezer pointed out. And then he looked at me.
It's nothing we need to discuss now, Edward said quickly.
Eliezer ignored the hint and continued. He probably wants your mate too, regardless. He must have been intrigued by a talent that could defy him in its human incarnation. Edward was uncomfortable with this topic. I didn't like it either. If Aro wanted me to do something, anything, all he had to do was threaten Edward and I would comply, and vice versa. Was death the lesser concern? Was it really capture we should fear? Edward changed the subject.
I think the Volturi were waiting for this, for some pretext. They couldn't know what form their excuse would come in, but the plan was already in place for when it did come. That's why Alice saw their decision before Irina triggered it. The decision was already made, just waiting for the pretense of a justification.
If the Volturi are abusing the trust all immortals have placed in them, Carmen murmured.
Does it matter? Eliezer asked. Who would believe it?
And even if others could be convinced that the Volturi are exploiting their power, how would it make any difference? No one can stand against them. Though some of us are apparently insane enough to try, Kate muttered.
Edward shook his head. You're only here to witness, Kate. Whatever Aro's goal, I don't think he's ready to tarnish the Volturi's reputation for it. If we can take away his argument against us, he'll be forced to leave us in peace.
Of course, Tanya murmured. No one looked convinced. For a few long minutes, nobody said anything. Then I heard the sound of tires turning off the highway pavement onto the Cullens' dirt drive.
Oh, crap, Charlie, I muttered. Maybe the Denalis could hang out upstairs until...
No, Edward said in a distant voice. His eyes were far away, staring blankly at the door. It's not your father. His gaze focused on me. Alice sent Peter and Charlotte, after all. Time to get ready for the next round.
Chapter 32 Company. The Cullens' enormous house was more crowded with guests than anyone would assume could possibly be comfortable. It only worked out because none of the visitors slept. Mealtimes were dicey, though. Our company cooperated as best they could. They gave Forks and LaPush a wide berth, only hunting out of state. Edward was a gracious host, lending out his cars as needed without so much as a wince. The compromise made me very uncomfortable, though I tried to tell myself that they'd all be hunting somewhere in the world regardless. Jacob was even more upset. The werewolves existed to prevent the loss of human life, and here was rampant murder being condoned barely outside the pack's borders. But under these circumstances, with Renesmee in acute danger, he kept his mouth shut and glared at the floor rather than the vampires. I was amazed at the easy acceptance the visiting vampires had for Jacob. The problems Edward had anticipated had never materialized. Jacob seemed more or less invisible to them, not quite a person, but also not food either. They treated him the way people who are not animal lovers treat the pets of their friends. Leah, Seth, Quill, and Embry were assigned to run with Sam for now, and Jacob would have happily joined them, except that he couldn't stand to be away from Renesmee, and Renesmee was busy fascinating the strange collection of Carlisle's friends. We'd replayed the scene of Renesmee's introduction to the Denali Coven a half dozen times. First for Peter and Charlotte, whom Alice and Jasper had sent our way without giving them any explanation at all. Like most people who knew Alice, they trusted her instructions despite the lack of information. Alice had told them nothing about which direction she and Jasper were heading.
she'd made no promise to ever see them again in the future.
Neither Peter nor Charlotte had ever seen an immortal child. Though they knew the rule, their negative reaction was not as powerful as the Denali vampires had been at first. Curiosity had driven them to allow Renesmee's explanation. And that was it. Now they were as committed to witnessing as Tanya's family. Carlyle had sent friends from Ireland and Egypt. The Irish clan arrived first, and they were surprisingly easy to convince. Siobhan, a woman of immense presence, whose huge body was both beautiful and mesmerizing as it moved in smooth undulations, was the leader. But she and her hard-faced mate, Liam, were long used to trusting the judgment of their newest coven member. Little Maggie, with her bouncy red curls, was not physically imposing like the other two, but she had a gift for knowing when she was being lied to, and her verdicts were never contested. Maggie declared that Edward spoke the truth, and so Siobhan and Liam accepted our story absolutely before even touching Renesmee. Amon and the other Egyptian vampires were another story. Even after two younger members of his coven, Benjamin and Tia, had been convinced by Renesmee's explanation, Amon refused to touch her and ordered his coven to leave. Benjamin, an oddly cheerful vampire who looked barely older than a boy and seemed both utterly confident and utterly careless at the same time, persuaded Amon to stay with a few subtle threats about disbanding their alliance. Amon stayed, but continued to refuse to touch Renesmee and would not allow his mate, Kebi, to touch her either. It seemed an unlikely grouping, though the Egyptians all looked so alike, with their midnight hair and olive-toned pallor, that they easily could have passed for a biological family. Amon was the senior member and the outspoken leader. Kebi never strayed farther away from Amon than his shadow, and I never heard her speak a single word. Tia, Benjamin's mate, was a quiet woman as well, though when she did speak, there was great insight and gravity to everything she said. Still, it was Benjamin whom they all seemed to revolve around, as if he had some invisible magnetism the others depended upon for their balance. I saw Eliezer staring at the boy with wide eyes and assumed Benjamin had a talent that drew the others to him. "It's not that," Edward told me when we were alone that night. "His gift is so singular that Amon is terrified of losing him, much like we had planned to keep Renesmee from Aro's knowledge." He sighed. "Amon has been keeping Benjamin from Aro's attention. Amon created Benjamin, knowing he would be special. What can he do? Something Eliezer's never seen before. Something I've never heard of. Something that even your shield would do nothing against." He grinned his crooked smile at me. "He can actually influence the elements. Earth, wind, water, and fire. True physical manipulation, no illusion of the mind. Benjamin's still experimenting with it, and Amon tries to mold him into a weapon. But you see how independent Benjamin is. He won't be used." "You like him," I surmised from the tone of his voice. "He has a very clear sense of right and wrong. I like his attitude." Amon's attitude was something else, and he and Kebi kept to themselves. Though Benjamin and Tia were well on their way to being fast friends with both the Denali and the Irish covens, we hoped that Carlyle's return would ease the remaining tension with Amon. Emmett and Rose sent individuals, any nomad friends of Carlyle's that they could track down. Garrett came first, a tall, rangy vampire with eager ruby eyes and long sandy hair he kept tied back with a leather thong, and it was apparent immediately that he was an adventurer. I imagine that we could have presented him with any challenge and he would have accepted just to test himself. He fell in quickly with the Denali sisters, asking endless questions about their unusual lifestyle. I wondered if vegetarianism was another challenge he would try just to see if he could do it. Mary and Randall also came, friends already, though they did not travel together. They listened to Renesmee's story and stayed to witness like the others. Like the Denalis, they considered what they would do if the Volturi did not pause for explanations. All three of the nomads toyed with the idea of standing with us. Of course, Jacob got more surly with each new addition. He kept his distance when he could, and when he couldn't, he grumbled to Renesmee that someone was going to have to provide an index if anyone expected him to keep all the new bloodsuckers' names straight.
Carlisle and Esme returned a week after they had gone, Emmett and Rosalie just a few days later, and all of us felt better when they were home. Carlisle brought one more friend home with him, though friend might have been the wrong term. Alistair was a misanthropic English vampire who counted Carlisle as his closest acquaintance, though he could hardly stand a visit more than once a century. Alistair very much preferred to wander alone, and Carlisle had called in a lot of favors to get him here. He shunned all company, and it was clear he didn't have any admirers in the gathered covens. The brooding, dark-haired vampire took Carlisle at his word about Renesmee's origins, refusing, like Amon, to touch her. Edward told Carlisle, Esme, and me that Alistair was afraid to be here, but more afraid of not knowing the outcome. He was deeply suspicious of all authority, and therefore naturally suspicious of the Volturi. What was happening now seemed to confirm all his fears.
"Of course, now they'll know I was here,"
we heard him grumble to himself in the attic, his preferred spot to sulk. "No way to keep it from Aro at this point. Centuries on the run, that's what this will mean. Everyone Carlisle's talked to in the last decade will be on their list. I can't believe I got myself sucked into this mess. What a fine way to treat your friends." But if he was right about having to run from the Volturi, at least he had more hope of doing that than the rest of us. Alistair was a tracker, though not nearly as precise and efficient as Dimitri. Alistair just felt an elusive pull toward whatever he was seeking. But that pull would be enough to tell him which direction to run, the opposite direction from Dimitri. And then another pair of unexpected friends arrived. Unexpected, because neither Carlisle nor Rosalie had been able to contact the Amazons.
"Carlisle!"
The taller of the two very tall, ferine women greeted him when they arrived. Both of them seemed as if they'd been stretched. Long arms and legs, long fingers, long black braids, and long faces with long noses. They wore nothing but animal skins, hide vests and tight-fitting pants that laced on the sides with leather ties. It wasn't just their eccentric clothes that made them seem wild, but everything about them, from their restless crimson eyes to their sudden darting movements. I'd never met any vampires less civilized. But Alice had sent them, and that was interesting news, to put it mildly. Why was Alice in South America? Just because she'd seen that no one else would be able to get in touch with the Amazons?
"Zafrina and Senna. But where's Kachiri?" Carlisle asked. "I've never seen you three apart."
"Alice told us we needed to separate," Zafrina answered in the rough, deep voice that matched her wild appearance. "It's uncomfortable to be away from each other. But Alice assured us that you needed us here, while she very much needed Kachiri somewhere else. That's all she would tell us, except that there was a great hurry."
Zafrina's statement trailed off into a question. And with the tremor of nerves that never went away no matter how often I did this, I brought Renesmee out to meet them. Despite their fierce appearance, they listened very calmly to our story, and then allowed Renesmee to prove the point. They were every bit as taken with Renesmee as any of the other vampires, but I couldn't help worrying as I watched their swift, jerky movements so close beside her. Senna was always near Zafrina, never speaking, but it wasn't the same as Amon and Kebi. Kebi's manner seemed obedient. Senna and Zafrina were more like two limbs of one organism. Zafrina just happened to be the mouthpiece. The news about Alice was oddly comforting. Clearly, she was on some obscure mission of her own as she avoided whatever Aro had planned for her. Edward was thrilled to have the Amazons with us, because Zafrina was enormously talented. Her gift could make a very dangerous offensive weapon. Not that Edward was asking for Zafrina to side with us in the battle, but if the Volturi did not pause when they saw our witnesses, perhaps they would pause for a different kind of scene. "It's a very straightforward illusion," Edward explained, when it turned out that I couldn't see anything as usual. Zafrina was intrigued and amused by my immunity, something she'd never encountered before, and she hovered restlessly while Edward described what I was missing. Edward's eyes unfocused slightly as he continued. "She can make most people see whatever she wants them to see. See that and nothing else. For example, right now I would appear to be alone in the middle of a rainforest. It's so clear I might possibly believe it, except for the fact that I can still feel you in my arms." Zafrina's lips twitched into her hard version of a smile. A second later, Edward's eyes focused again, and he grinned back.
"Impressive," he said.
Renesmee was fascinated with the conversation, and she reached out fearlessly towards Zafrina.
"Can I see?" she asked.
"What would you like to see?" Zafrina asked.
"What you showed Daddy."
Zafrina nodded, and I watched anxiously as Renesmee's eyes stared blankly into space. A second later, Renesmee's dazzling smile lit up her face.
"More," she commanded.
After that, it was hard to keep Renesmee away from Zafrina and her pretty pictures. I worried because I was quite sure that Zafrina was able to create images that were not pretty at all. But through Renesmee's thoughts, I could see Zafrina's visions for myself. They were as clear as any of Renesmee's own memories, like they were real, and thus judge for myself whether they were appropriate or not. Though I didn't give her up easily, I had to admit it was a good thing Zafrina was keeping Renesmee entertained. I needed my hands. I had so much to learn, both physically and mentally, and the time was so short. My first attempt at learning to fight did not go well. Edward had me pinned in about 2 seconds, but instead of letting me wrestle my way free, which I absolutely could have, he leaped up and away from me. I knew immediately that something was wrong. He was still as stone, staring across the meadow we were practicing in.
"I'm sorry, Bella," he said.
"No, I'm fine," I said. "Let's go again."
"I can't."
"What do you mean you can't? We just started."
He didn't answer.
"Look, I know I'm no good at this, but I can't get better if you don't help me."
He said nothing.
Playfully, I sprang at him. He made no defense at all, and we both fell to the ground. He was motionless as I pressed my lips to his jugular.
"I win," I announced.
His eyes narrowed, but he said nothing.
"Edward, what's wrong? Why won't you teach me?"
A full minute passed before he spoke again.
"I just can't bear it.
Emmett and Rosalie know as much as I do. Tanya and Eliezer probably know more. Ask someone else."
"That's not fair. You're good at this. You helped Jasper before. You fought with him and all the others too. Why not me? What did I do wrong?"
He sighed, exasperated. His eyes were dark, barely any gold to lighten the black.
"Looking at you that way, analyzing you as a target, seeing all the ways I can kill you," he flinched, "just makes it too real for me. We don't have so much time that it will really make a difference who your teacher is. Anyone can teach you the fundamentals."
I scowled. He touched my pouting lower lip and smiled. "Besides, it's unnecessary. The Volturi will stop. They will be made to understand."
"But if they don't, I need to learn this.
Find another teacher." That was not our last conversation on the subject, but I never swayed him an inch from his decision. Emmett was more than willing to help, though his teaching felt to me a lot like revenge for all the lost arm wrestling matches. If I could still bruise, I would have been purple from head to toe. Rose, Tanya, and Eliezer all were patient and supportive. Their lessons reminded me of Jasper's fighting instructions to the others last June, though those memories were fuzzy and indistinct. Some of the visitors found my education entertaining, and some even offered assistance. The nomad Garrett took a few turns. He was a surprisingly good teacher. He interacted so easily with others in general that I wondered how he'd never found a coven. I even fought once with Zafrina while Renesmee watched from Jacob's arms. I learned several tricks, but I never asked for her help again. In truth, though I liked Zafrina very much, and I knew she wouldn't really hurt me, the wild woman scared me to death. I learned many things from my teachers, but I had the sense that my knowledge was still impossibly basic. I had no idea how many seconds I would last against Alec and Jane. I only prayed that it would be long enough to help. Every minute of the day that I wasn't with Renesmee or learning to fight, I was in the backyard working with Kate, trying to push my internal shield outside of my own brain to protect someone else. Edward encouraged me in this training. I knew he hoped I would find a way of contributing that satisfied me while also keeping me out of the line of fire. It was just so hard. There was nothing to get a hold of, nothing solid to work with. I had only my raging desire to be of use, to be able to keep Edward, Renesmee, and as much of my family as possible safe with me. Over and over, I tried to force the nebulous shield outside of myself, with only faint, sporadic success. It felt like I was wrestling to stretch an invisible rubber band, a band that would change from concrete tangibility into insubstantial smoke at any random moment. Only Edward was willing to be our guinea pig, to receive shock after shock from Kate while I grappled incompetently with the insides of my head. We worked for hours at a time, and I felt like I should be covered in sweat from the exertion. But of course, my perfect body didn't betray me that way. My weariness was all mental. It killed me that it was Edward who had to suffer. My arms wrapped uselessly around him while he winced over and over from Kate's low setting. I tried as hard as I could to push my shield around us both. Every now and then I would get it, and then it would slip away again. I hated this practice, and I wished that Zafrina would help instead of Kate. Then all Edward would have to do was look at Zafrina's illusions until I could stop him from seeing them. But Kate insisted that I needed better motivation, by which she meant my hatred of watching Edward's pain. I was beginning to doubt her assertion from the first day we'd met, that she wasn't sadistic about the use of her gift. She seemed to be enjoying herself to me. "Hey," Edward said cheerfully, trying to hide any evidence of distress in his voice. "Anything to keep me from fighting practice." "That one barely stung. Good job, Bella." I took a deep breath, trying to grasp exactly what I'd done right. I tested the elastic band, struggling to force it to remain solid as I stretched it away from me. "Again, Kate," I grunted through my clenched teeth. Kate pressed her palm to Edward's shoulder. He sighed in relief. "Nothing that time." She raised an eyebrow. "That wasn't low, either." "Good," I huffed. "Get ready," she told me, and reached out to Edward again. This time he shuddered, and a low breath hissed between his teeth. "Sorry, sorry, sorry," I chanted, biting my lip. Why couldn't I get this right? "You're doing an amazing job, Bella," Edward said, pulling me tight against him. "You've really only been working at this for a few days, and you're already projecting sporadically. Kate, tell her how well she's doing." Kate pursed her lips. "I don't know. She's obviously got tremendous ability, and we're only beginning to touch it. She can do better, I'm sure. She's just lacking incentive." I stared at her in disbelief, my lips automatically curling back from my teeth. How could she think I lacked motivation with her shocking Edward right here in front of me? I heard murmurs from the audience that had grown steadily as I practiced. Only Eleazar, Carmen, and Tanya at first, but then Garrett had wandered over. Then Benjamin and Tia, Siobhan and Maggie, and now even Alistair was peering down from a window on the third story. The spectators agreed with Edward. They thought I was already doing well. "Kate," Edward said in a warning voice, as some new course of action occurred to her, but she was already in motion. She darted along the curve of the river to where Zafrina, Senna, and Renesmee were walking slowly, Renesmee's hand in Zafrina's as they traded pictures back and forth. Jacob shadowed them from a few feet behind. "Nessie," Kate said. The newcomers had quickly picked up the irritating nickname. "Would you like to come help your mother?"
"No,"
I half snarled. Edward hugged me reassuringly. I shook him off just as Renesmee flitted across the yard to me, with Kate, Zafrina, and Senna right behind her.
"Absolutely not, Kate," I hissed.
Renesmee reached for me, and I opened my arms automatically. She curled into me, pressing her head into the hollow beneath my shoulder.
"But Mama, I want to help," she said in a determined voice.
Her hand rested against my neck, reinforcing her desire with images of the two of us together, a team.
"No," I said, quickly backing away.
Kate had taken a deliberate step in my direction, her hand stretched toward us. "Stay away from us, Kate," I warned her.
"No,"
she began stalking forward. She smiled like a hunter cornering her prey. I shifted Renesmee so that she was clinging to my back, still backing away at a pace that matched Kate's. Now my hands were free, and if Kate wanted to keep her hands attached to her wrists, she'd better keep her distance. Kate probably didn't understand, never having known for herself the passion of a mother for her child. She must not have realized just how far past too far she'd already gone. I was so furious that my vision took on a strange reddish tint, and my tongue tasted like burning metal. The strength I usually worked to keep restrained flowed through my muscles, and I knew I could crush her into diamond-hard rubble if she pushed me to it.